I think we all love us some rebound or rebuild stories. We want it for our own lives, for our friends, for our family. When something bad happens to someone or they seem kicked in the mouth by life, we want to see them rise up and succeed. That's a legitimately cool aspect of the human condition, I'd argue. I'd even say some of the narrative about Steve Jobs that makes his story resonate is that he got pushed out of Apple, came back, and made it one of the most valuable companies in the world for a time. The rebound aspect of the story is a big part of it. It's actually not a bad segue, because the guest on episode 4 is Sid Clevenger. He actually lives in Dallas, and I live in Fort Worth, but I didn't know that when I started taping it. So I was sitting in a sparsely populated co-working space about 40 miles from him when we recorded this. Anyway, Sid is an entrepreneur and a lead generation machine. We talk a little bit about that stuff. He definitely loves him some entrepreneurs like Tony Robbins, Richard Branson, Jobs, Gates, etc. But there's a lot more human to this story. Sid had a rough first marriage and lost big in a business deal about three and a half years ago. He can actually remember the taste of gunpowder in his mouth as a gun was perched there, and now he's clearing $60,000 some months. It's a nice come-up story, and instead of framing it just around Jobs or Branson or Gary Vee or putting the entrepreneurial Instagram quote panels on a pedestal, we look at some of the human elements involved. How relationships and your brain's framework really can drive you from a low place to a successful place. I hope you enjoy it.
So I had like started a business. I've never really worked for anybody else.
That's cool.
And I started a business or a software that I've always been like a huge foodie. And Louisville is a huge foodie town. There's a ton of mom and pop restaurants everywhere.
Yeah, I knew that. I actually did know that.
Yeah. So I Grubhub and Uber Eats and Amazon Eats and all that hadn't really made their way to Louisville yet. Like they hadn't really gotten there yet. So like 3-4 years ago, I entered into basically an empty marketplace with online private label online ordering, and I was only charging 3% versus the 30% that Grubhub and all those guys are charging. So I was able to come in and get like 300 or 400 restaurants pretty quick with the software. And it was, you know, people were on average spending $40 to $50 with me a month. I mean, it was stupidly cheap.
Right. That's cool, man.
Yeah. So it was really cool.
So how'd you end up in Dallas?
Well, so I worked that for about a, so I went to graduate school in Florida, in Miami, and got my MBA. I met my ex-wife down there. Florida, South Florida in particular, is just not a glamorous place to live. It sounds like it, but
I hear you, man. My ex is actually from South Florida too. We got that in common.
Yeah, it's a different world. It's like, man, like, you know, they make it seem like it's all these high rise and all this money. But the thing is people, it's like going to Las Vegas for the weekend. It really
is. Yeah.
You know,
it's like Las Vegas with water.
Las Vegas with water and cruises.
That's yeah.
Hospitality, it's the perfect place to live because you can like be in hospitality, work the cruise ship for like 6 months out of the year and then have 6 months off. I mean, like, that's that type of person. I'm not that type of person. So for me, I hated it. I hated everything about South Florida. But it was a great learning experience, man. Like that was the first time I actually moved. Like I moved not really knowing anything about the place.
Right.
And when we moved down there, like I hated it from the get-go. I lived there for like three years. And, you know, I met my ex-wife and all that. And then we had no family and we decided to move back home. So we moved back to to Louisville. She got a job, I got a job, and we just started working. I was working at an ad agency. She was working at a plant that helped build, like, stuff. Like, the big Ford factory is in Louisville. So between Humana and Ford, like, they employ like, no joke, probably 70%, 80% of Louisville.
Right.
So she worked it over at one of the plants where they build axles and stuff for the Ford trucks, and then I worked at an ad agency in town. You know, we bought a house, white picket fence, all that jazz. I started my online ordering company as a side hustle and then blew it up to me at the time, which was like $8,000 or $10,000 a month. And that was a shit ton of money. It was more money than anybody had ever made, you know, at 27, 28 years old that I graduated college with. I had my own software. I was my own boss. I could do what the fuck I wanted and I didn't have to answer to anybody. I loved it. It got to a point though, to where like, you know, I wanted financial help. I wanted reach and stuff like that. So I ended up getting a partner And he basically said, look, you know, I got all these accounts. I'm just going to give you these accounts, but I want 50% ownership, and I want, you know, da, 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 da. So at the time, to me, it was a move because it was just instantly going to double my company. And then he had agents and he had all these people that would sell for us, you know, da, 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 da. And then, you know, it ended up being complete crapshoot. Like, no one sold for us. He didn't really support us. And he ended up getting 50% of the company and ended up only giving me like two accounts. Come to find out, he was like, I got a phone call. Like, so it's crazy. Like, one Saturday I went and I closed like our largest account. It was like a mom and pop like franchise in Lexington, Kentucky. But it was a college town. So they had like five different locations, and like they would do $10,000, $15,000 in online orders a month. So for me, that was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
That to me, that's like, you know, revenue of $2,000, $3,000 a month, you know, in residual income. That's a huge account for us. So I'm stoked. I come home to find out that my wife, who has claimed to be going to Boston for work, which legitimately I think she was going to Boston because she was getting training, but she had been seeing a guy up in Boston and ended up getting pregnant. The guy called me when I got home, and I don't even remember his name. He called me and he was like, I'm sorry, I didn't know she was married. That's like really the only thing I remember. And then I completely went into shock. Basically, he had got her pregnant, and then I confronted her about it, and then she swore up and down that it wasn't true until she was pregnant, you know, obviously. But I just was like, fuck you, like, get the hell out.
So wait, I have a couple follows on this. Okay, so first of all, I don't want to like dredge up a bunch of memories, but
no, you're good.
Generally, how old are you at this time when that happened?
32. Oh, that happened when I was 20. That happened in 2016. So I'm 32 now. So
29 or so.
3.5 years ago. Yeah, I'm 32. Okay. Yeah, so I was like 28, 29. When I happened.
So was that, in your opinion, was that an immediate break, or was there any effort to reconcile it at all?
For me and Larissa, me and my ex?
Yeah.
Oh, no. To be honest, man, I wanted to break up with her 2 years before. She was Brazilian, gorgeous, like drop-dead gorgeous, and drop-dead loon. Like, the girl was crazy. And most Brazilians are. And you know, she was a nutcase. But the thing was, is being a kid from Kentucky and in the Bible Belt, you know, we take marriage seriously. You know, I did, like, you know, I mean, I sat there and done all this stuff for her so we could get married because I loved her. I did. I thought I did. And, you know, and then I felt like, you know, this is, you know, for better or for worse. So you're young, I was young, I was dumb. I didn't want my parents or my family to, because for me, it's like, you know, if I make this decision, I have to live with this decision my entire life, right? And my parents were acting like they wanted to keep her around. My sisters were acting like they wanted to keep her around. My family. So I didn't want to be like that guy that got a divorce, because I knew what people talked about, people that got divorced, right? So I was like, fuck, what are people going to think? And so I never did it. To me, this was like, thank God, this is a reason I can leave. So like when it happened, it sucked. Don't get me wrong. It hurt like a motherfucker. But at the same time, it wasn't, you know, it's a great story. What really hurt me was the embezzlement, because I lost about 130 grand in that. And then I lost another probably like 30 or 40 with Larissa.
Right.
All in. And then, you know, so I mean, I ended up losing about 150. I lost everything. I mean,
this is, it's funny too, man, because my ex is Peruvian. Your story is more dramatic than mine. Ours was just kind of like a burn away where I feel like,
nah, man, my ex wife threw knives at me, bro.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. She threw knives at me. She closed fist hit me in the face. She threatened like hurt me when I was sleeping in my own house, and I'd have to like lock myself in the guest bedroom. Like, dude, typical Latinas, brother. Like, they're going to chop your balls off at 4 and they got dinner ready by 7 every single night.
First thing I want to try on this is, sure. So you talked about the Bible Belt stuff and like the notion of marriage coming from that spot. Yeah. And I had that a little bit too. I grew up in the Northeast, so it's different, but I had that a little bit too. I feel like everybody obviously has a degree of commitment to the idea of marriage if they get into it. So
Very conservative, you know, just conservative.
Right.
No more, no less. Just very conservative Bible Belt people. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just the culture. It's how people grew up.
Right. So when yours ended, was there ever, I mean, like, obviously it was more on her side of the ledger, but did you ever feel kind of like a guilt or like you didn't want to present the story to friends, or was there ever any of that? Or were you like,
I mean, it was one of those, like, I guess from what I can remember, I mean, you know, I don't really think about it a lot now. So right. To be honest, because it's been 3 years or whatever. And, you know, we're doing, you know, those days are long gone, you know, like, you know, to what we're doing today. But, you know, it's, you know, it's a really cool story because everything did happen. And I think when I look back at it, I'm really able to see, you know, now me and Tiffany are just such a different point in our journey with entrepreneurship. You know, we both have risen. We've reached levels, you know. I mean, I once had a $98,000 day. She had a $60,000 month last month, which was the first time she's ever done that. You know, so, you know, we feel like, you know, we've kind of went through kind of the getting started and the initial rise and all of that, because we've both been doing this now for 3 to 5 years. But from what I remember is the whole thing of taking action. I think the biggest thing I can take back from that experience was, I mean, I was a crazy person. And I think the reason I was at that state was because I was desperate. I was desperate to find happiness, which is so sad. I was desperate to find joy. I was desperate to find a life that I enjoyed living in, a life that I enjoyed myself in, a life that I woke up not in tears. Like, I mean, there were times, bro, I woke up and all I heard was bang. Like, you know, I mean, I legitimately had a gun in my mouth in 2016. I'll never forget how gunpowder smells, you know, what gunpowder smells like. You know, like, I mean, I just remember taking action. There's a great Tony Robbins little 64-second video about resourcefulness. And I thought I understood it back then. I understood the surface of it, but now, like, understanding the source of it and, like, really where it comes from. And that obviously happens. You grow as an entrepreneur, but man, like, he would understanding, like, you know, as an entrepreneur, the trigger of going all in, because that is just such a staple of me and Tiffany and everything that we do. You know, we're starting a CBD business, you know, where seven weeks ago, bro, I had my advertising agency. And then all of a sudden, you know, we had all these things kind of in the air that we were working on. 7 weeks later, Tiffany's getting ready to sign like a $350,000 corporate deal with Delta. I just got hired on as a board member and CMO of a tech startup out of Silicon Valley. We're start selling CBD in an e-commerce store on Monday. We have 23 people that are selling CBD with us, that we're training to sell CBD with us. And we're all, you know what I mean? So, like, things as an entrepreneur change so fast and there's so much opportunity. And I think that is in direct correlation from the decision that I made 3 years ago. I think that you have to be able to drop shit sometimes and go.
What would you say is the biggest, I mean, you spoke to the idea of taking action, and I agree with that. What do you think are some of the biggest, not necessarily like entrepreneurial moves, but some of the biggest, like, things in your head psychologically that allowed you to go from the gunpowder moment to now? Like, what are some of the biggest jumps that you feel like you had to make internally?
Well, I had to rewire my entire brain, you know, which isn't, like, I know that sounds super creepy to people, but it's not. You know, you have to rewire how you think. You have to rewire triggers. You have to rewire emotional. Like, I mean, I can't tell you how many times, like, I'll feel adrenaline through my body when something happens, and it's unconscious. There are things, you know, I mean, like my bride, who is just, I mean, thank God for her, which, you know, I think she would be a great guest on your show as well. You know, she teaches NLP. She teaches how to get rid of self-sabotage, how to get rid of trauma, how to get rid of, you know. Now I think of, like, the people like JP, I'm able to talk about JP, I'm able to talk about Larissa, because she's been able to help me clear the negative trauma from that. So when I talk about it, when I think about it, it's empty. There's no emotion with it. There's no emotion tied to it, because she's been able to help me kind of reframe what happened. It's not like 3 years ago, when all this stuff happened was one of the biggest pivotal moments in my life. But I made the right choice and I made the right decisions. And because of that, I conquered it. And because of that, I'm helping others do the same. You know, my highest intention is to help 100 people who have a gun in their hand choose life and become successful. Tiffany's is to impact 1 million women. So anything and everything that we do now is geared toward that. Whatever we're doing is just a tool to help us find those people, right? So, like, you know, I would say the biggest thing that happened to me is obviously surrendering to the idea of rewiring my brain and surrendering to the idea that the culture that I grew up in the Midwest is not how the world works, right? Money, people have this whole thing about money in their head, and it's bullshit. Money has everything to do with velocity. The faster money exchanges hands, the more money people make. It is that simple. Hate the guy, love the guy. Donald Trump has made our economy a lot better because he has increased the velocity of money exchanging hands. Our economy is one of the best economies right now because of that, right? And I think that people, you know, that was a big shift for me, surrendering and understanding that the world isn't the way that I might see it. And I might have to understand and look at it differently because it's never difficult. It's only different. And when I can understand things from a different view, I can understand how to, you know, knowledge is power. Right.
Okay, so here's one that I think people struggle with, especially in like 20s and 30s. And obviously there's different tiers of it. So let's talk through this for a second. So there's a lot of very good entrepreneurial biz dev type advice and ideas out there. And there's a lot of complete bullshit out there for sure. So how would you say you go about approaching or positioning yourself for new opportunities? Do you think it's just like grab life by the balls, or do you have like a way that you try to approach it?
This is going to sound wonky as hell, but you know, like for me, I guess, can I give you an example, I guess?
I think
stories and storytelling is the best way to do it for anybody because, you know, it allows there to be a story behind it. So you can paint pictures in your head. So with the CBD business that I told you, right? I mean, I'm a marketer. My initial rise as an entrepreneur was kind of building this advertising agency to help people with digital marketing and social media and stuff like that. And that was kind of how I initially went out there. But we, you know, for the past 3 years, cannabis, I don't want to say CBD, but cannabis, period, has been on my mind. I mean, like, and the reason that is, I actually just wrote an article about this. The reason that is because I had a friend of mine named Johnny who lived down in who lived down near West Palm Beach in Florida, who had had found a random dirt, but this guy that owned the dirt business for the pot growers couldn't sell his freaking self out of a paper bag. So Johnny comes and he's like, hey, like, so he learns about this dirt. And without telling the guy that he's going to sell anything, he goes and he gets connections in Colorado. And I think he gets 3 initial connections in Colorado. Boom, the guy goes from zero to like $18,000 a month in basically being the middleman for this dirt business, being a merchandiser rep. Now the guy is clearing, profiting over $1 million a year. And he is literally like about to shut down his My Community Pharmacy business, which he has multiple locations, does like $1.5 million a year at each location. And he's about to shut that down just to sell dirt to pot growers, right? So initially, like, I saw this and I looked at his bank account. I looked at the checks and I was like, holy crap. Like, all you're doing is like, dude, I never even see the dirt. Like, I just make a monthly commission, which is like 20% or something like that, right? So I was like, holy crap. I mean, we're talking 6-figure months right here. Now the guy doesn't have to do anything. All he does is make new relationships. He's like, he's this guy's dirt salesperson is all this guy is. Ever since then, I was like, holy crap. And then, you know, I started looking at it as a Kentucky boy and as a guy that, you know, even as we're doing the CBD business, I'm like 100% like making sure everything is above par. Like, because, you know, everybody's looking at us, right? So like, all we got to do is make one little mistake and things are going to jump off. But when starting the new business, I think that I knew that I wanted to get into this cannabis business. I've known it for 3 years. And then Gary Vee, about 3 months ago, I don't know if you saw this, but Gary Vaynerchuk came out and on a speech and he was like, don't let cannabis be your next IP bubble. He's like, I'm heavily invested in it. And I suggest you be too. And it was like one of those spinoffs. Like, I don't know how I heard it. It was that night. I overheard it from something. And then I looked at it and I was like, holy crap. And then like, it was on my mind again. So, you know, after kind of playing around with the idea, and I had talked with my finance guy, and I was like, hey, you know, like, I think I'm just going to buy mutual funds so I can get into this. Can you give me a good fund that I can sit on, but I can take anytime I need, but I want a good aggressive fund in this CBD business to at least have something invested, right? Something. And I literally was like going to be meeting my finance guy like the next day. And I was asking, I'd go out at night on our patio. We live in a high rise here in downtown Dallas. And I went out and I was overlooking the lights of downtown. And I do this every night, and I have about a half an hour of creative thinking. And I was praying and asking the universe and asking my maker about, hey, is CBD right? Can you just show me a sign if this is not only what I should be doing, but give me an avenue to go? I'll go wherever you want me to go, but if this is me, can you just give me a sign before I do this mutual fund? If there's no sign and it's not meant to be, I'll listen and I'll go. But if there is something, can you please show me? And a lot of times people get signs out of nowhere, but they're just refused to see them, right? So like the sign was, is we were running ads for our marketing company, and we had a lead come in, no joke, like a couple weeks later after I'd been doing all this and asking the universe for a sign. The day before, I think, or the 2 days before, I went to go meet my financial guy. We get this lead from a guy named Kyle who owns 3 CBD stores up in North Dallas. And I give Kyle a call, and he's like all in with the marketing stuff, wants to meet us and all this stuff. And we're like, cool, you know, awesome. You know, we don't get a chance to meet a lot of, you know, a lot of our clients, because we work with everybody. You know, I work with people in Australia and Canada, everywhere. So I wanted to meet him. So I was like, let's go up there and meet him. Me and Tiffany took a morning, and my bride took a morning and drove up there. And first question I asked him, I said, hey, man, so what do you want to get with working with me and Tiffany in our marketing? What is your goal over the next 90 days? And he looked at me and he said, I want to sell more wholesale, and I want to really blow up an e-commerce business. And Tiffany just kind of looked, we glanced at each other. It happens a lot. We both had the same thought. We glanced at each other, and it was just like, ding, ding, ding. And it like, within a couple hours, we already had a business plan, a business model. Like, it was crazy. Like, everything just kind of fit into place. And that's, you know, I think a lot of times when things are meant to happen, that happens. You know, I mean, I wasn't forceful. I was asking for it. I was praying for a sign. The sign wasn't right smack dab in the middle of my face. Sid, meet Kyle. Kyle and Sid, do business. It was a lead. And I had to exploit that. And I had a feeling that the CBD – but at the same time, I just, you know, I didn't go out there forcing the issue. It just sort of happened on its own. But all of these things fell into place. And I think, you know, honestly, words have extreme power. They really do. And, you know, your conscious mind and your subconscious mind, I mean, a lot of people think that stuff's wonky, but Tony Robbins, Ed Milet, Brian Tracy, I mean, all these motivational speakers who are all licensed in NLP, to me, that's a sign that it is legit and it does work. And there's so many tests on it. But I mean, like, you know, to speak it to the universe, man, I'm sorry. I kind of went off on that telling you the story, but I wanted it just to you. And if you're recording this, for people to know that, you know, like, your words are so powerful, and just like talking to the universe and talking to yourself and having creative thinking, journaling and asking for things and asking for signs. A lot of times the universe is going to listen, and it's going to give you what you need. You just got to be willing to accept the answer. If that makes any sense.
No, I agree. I think that it makes perfect sense, and I agree with it too. So let me ask you this. What if somebody was presently struggling, like up to gun in mouth level, what would you tell somebody is kind of like the first step if they can't see beyond their series of problems or concerns? What do you think would be the first step for somebody to move forward in their life or get on a more successful path?
I think for me, you know, I guess let me prelude this question with, you know, first, on every level, there's new devils. So, you know, happily ever after doesn't exist. You know, your happily ever after now might be making $10,000 a month. And when you get to $10,000 a month, guess what? You got new challenges and you got more hunger. You want 10,000 to turn into 25,000, 25 to turn into 50, 50 to turn into 100, right? There's no happily ever after. And I think, you know, people believe in that, and it's not true. It's a lie. You know, and not that it's a lie. It's just happily ever after doesn't exist. And I think that we got to understand that notion of there is not a place that I can get to or, you know, or be at where I'm not going to have to do anything anymore and I'm not going to have to further my cause. There's no complacency level that you can get at where you can just sleep in, play golf, and not do anything and be okay.
Yep.
That's the first thing. In regards to figuring out how to kind of get out of their own head and how to get going with challenges that they might have, I think first, you know, language is everything. I think you've heard, you know, you've heard me through this conversation. I've never used the word problem or issue or anything like that because we don't have problems. We don't have issues. We have challenges that we're going to overcome. We have challenges that might be in the way of something, but we don't have a problem. Problems have to get solved and or resolved. And those, that just sounds ugly, but we have challenges that we're overcome. I don't have goals either. I have targets, right? Targets that I'm going to explode through and exceed on, not just hit a goal, like a soccer goal, right? I mean, those little words matter. And I believe in, like, you know, with this, getting out of your own way, I think you got, you know, for me, the best way I do, like I've done with anyone in this business, is you first got to accept and understand that a single thought can be worth $1 billion. Mm-hmm. Uber, Apple, Microsoft, Dale, electricity. Aim every single day at moving towards that target. I think so many people get caught up in being overwhelmed and looking at this big goal they got to reach. But the key, in my opinion, to being successful is consistency. And you have to wake up every morning and aim at getting 1% better. Or getting 1% closer to that target that you're looking to reach, right? So whatever that 1% might be, you need to aim toward that. It's not about going out there and making $1 billion, you know, in one day. That's not what this stuff is. And what it's about is every day going out there and grinding it out and putting good content out there and putting good stuff out there about whatever it is you do, building a plan and executing that plan every single day to get to your overall goal. And I think like that's what a lot of people need to get out of this. I can make a lot of money really fast. I need to get into this. I can build something really great to help a lot of people. And once they can wrap their head around that, it's going to become a lot easier. You know, the more people you help, the more money you make. You want to make $1 million, go help 1 million people. I think people need to understand how can this idea or how can what I'm thinking about right now help someone?
Yeah.
Not money. The money always comes, believe me. But if you can get your head around how can I move more money or help more people and not around how can I make more money, your ideas and your ways of getting out of your own stuff is going to become a lot easier. And it's just a simple reframe. I think about how many people I help, not about how much money I make. I know if I help more people, I make more money. They're combined.
Yeah, it sounds semantic to people, but it's completely true. And there's a good Bill Gates speech to Stanford.
The new one on Netflix?
Yeah, I watched it.
I haven't seen all of it. I've only seen the preview. I've been hearing amazing reviews about it. Like
it's good. I mean, you could view it as there are elements where it seems like an infomercial for his career, which is fine because he's earned that. But there's some stuff too where he talks in some of the same terms as you, where it's not so much about trying to make X amount of money. It's about trying to solve a thing for X amount of people, you know?
But in his younger age, which was interesting. I mean, he used to call people out in the conference room, kick executives out.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And also what's funny that people don't think about is like, because he's in this second act and he has been for probably like 15, 19 years now where he's like a philanthropist or whatever. It's like philanthropist. It's like
he's just a board member of the Microsoft, right?
He doesn't, yeah.
He owns like, a ton of shares and he's a board member. That means
what's
like
funny is you think like okay, like Microsoft didn't get really big until like 83, 84. And it's like 75 to 83. He was literally just like building and then trying to sell software in Albuquerque and like going between a 2-bedroom apartment and like different defense contractors that needed early stage Microsoft shit. Like, it's just weird to think that he basically spent like a decade of his life essentially living like nondescriptly. Like he was building something, no doubt, but you're like,
but he didn't know what.
Right. But it's like a decade of his life where he was basically like building something and going back and forth between.
As good as jobs.
Yeah. It's like they're obviously their arcs are different. And the way that people tell stories about them are different, but yeah, I mean the Netflix thing is good, you know.
Jobs' book is amazing.
It's very good.
He had a lot of Hollywood stuff in it, and some of the stories I don't think are quite as accurate. I think that they're being told from third parties because obviously, you know, like some of the stuff Steve's not even had seen, so like they're just doing it based off memory or whatever. So I think there's stuff in there that isn't 100% true, but at the same time, I think they did a really good job of storytelling with Jobs because, you know, no one. In entrepreneurship, man, I mean, like, everybody only sees, like, I'm wearing a shirt today, which is perfect for this. It says overnight success, you know, years in the making. And I actually had, I bought this shirt, like, right before I came to Dallas. It's hilarious. I got this shirt and another shirt. And to me, these were, like, huge, it was a huge deal. It was, like, $30, but it was, like, all I had at the time. And like, I had these shirts, and I said I wanted to get this shirt because 3 years down the road, I wanted to be able to talk about how I moved here wanting to be an overnight success, and now I'm an overnight success, but it's taken me 3 years to get to, and it's kind of full circle for me because I accidentally found this shirt in my closet this morning, and it's all wrinkled up and used, and like, I was 55 pounds heavier when I moved here, so like, I've lost all this weight, so it's all really big right now and stuff. There's a hole in it. It's got stains on it. But, you know, like, it symbolically, it means so much to me. And I think, like, you know, the story about no one realizes that, like, Steve Jobs, I mean, he would make thousands of calls a week and not one person would say yes. They tell him to fuck off or they laugh at him. And really, thousands of calls a week. I mean, like, you know, I mean, he didn't know so many times because what he was doing was so radical. And it was, you know, and people just didn't think that way back then. You know, same thing with, you know, I think, you know, they were just two geniuses that stumbled upon what the world needed, and the world needed them as much as they needed it to work. And I think they just, you know, they were put on this earth to do what they did.
Okay. So two things I wanted to touch on, and then I'll let you go.
No, you're good.
So first, okay. Obviously having been in an unsuccessful relationship and a successful relationship in the span of 24 to 36 months, what would you say are some of the defining factors between the those two extremes, like a successful one versus unsuccessful?
I mean, first off, I want to make sure that, you know, I wasn't I'm not going to say I was 100% saint in my first marriage. I was young. I never cheated. I never wasn't a drug head. I was never in jail. I didn't do anything like that. But you know, to say I was the perfect husband, you know, did I ever get upset or argue with my ex-wife? Absolutely. Did she ever piss me off and I would, you know, like get upset at her? Absolutely. I never hit her. I never did anything like that. But let me just, I wasn't like perfect by any means. I mean, we're all human. But, you know, I think the biggest, you know, Tiffany and I think we're just more compatible. I think we're both entrepreneurs. We both have, you know, extremely similar roadmaps to what we want to do in life. I think we're just, you know, kindred spirits. So that really helps. Do we fight? Yes. I mean, you know, we're both extremely, I mean, people joke about it all the time. They never fight. They're like the perfect power couple. And it's like, no, we're a power couple. And being a power couple means we're extremely, you know, aggressive. Like we're both alpha, we're alphas. So like we bump heads a lot and we have, you know, we have disagreements on how things should happen. But at the same time, we all understand that these disagreements are only them. We're able to have the disagreements and know that they don't bleed over or know that they never get exceeded past X, right? Like we have agreements and rules that we're not allowed to follow or not allowed to go down. We both have those. With Larissa, which was my ex-wife, we didn't have those. Like I think the biggest thing that happened with me and Larissa is when we would argue about past things that couldn't be taken down, right? Like, you know, she would get mad. I think, you know, one day I think that, you know, she would get upset about something that happened 3 years before or 2 years before. But then every time we would get into a disagreement or an argument, she would use that against me. Now, I'm not saying what I did was right or wrong, but at the same time, she would use the past. We didn't understand agreements. We just would get mad at each other. And then it would get to where when we would argue who can hurt someone else the most, and which is really, really scary. I think, you know, me and Tiffany, we've caught ourselves in that as well. We just get frustrated, because the biggest challenge that Tiffany and I deal with, this is the successful relationship, is both of us get ridiculously overworked and tired, and then it's just us, and then we allow small frustrations, and then we just use that frustration or we use that challenge to, you know, just vent to the other person. And that venting sometimes is tough because, you know, it's hard and heavy stuff that you're having to take in on. But I think, you know, there's never been a time that Tiffany and I have both been knocked out, but there have been times that one of us have leaned on each other. But the biggest thing, man, is we have agreements. We stick to those agreements. We have goals. We work on our life together. I think the big thing, when we wake up every morning, we have a whiteboard that we look at right in front of our bed, and it has like our highest intentions. It has posted notes in a specific way, like of what our highest intentions are, always working out. And we, our goal is not a single mission, right? Like, we've molded ourselves into, we have a single mission, and it's not about Sid's business or Tiffany's business. It's not about what I'm doing or she's doing. It's about what we're doing. And we've adopted that, which has made it really great, right? Like today, I could sit here and say, well, I got all this stuff I need to do for Sid's advertising agency or this or that. But the thing is I get up and me and Tiffany talk about what do we need to do and what do we need to delegate so that our, you know, stuff, whatever our stuff is, whether it's me helping her with her stuff, me, her helping her with my stuff. Like yesterday, she was helping me with editing an article that, you know, that's going to be an article that's going to get put into a publication, but I needed help with editing it because she understood the concept a little bit more than me and understood the language that could be used. So she came in and she edited for me. We do that kind of stuff for each other all the time because, like, her editing it and me getting it into this publication is going to help our greater cause, not her, me, or whatever. And I think that's a big thing in relationships. When you get into a relationship and you guys decide you want to get married, especially if you're in the entrepreneurial world, you have to have a goal together. You have to have a target together that you all want to reach. Too many times, I think people get divorced that are entrepreneurs because one person outgrows the other. I see that all the time. You know, like entrepreneurs who marry non-entrepreneurs. The non-entrepreneurs aren't as, hungry or as motivated as entrepreneurs. And entrepreneurs, as you know, are cut from a different cloth. So I believe that entrepreneurs tend to, you know, if they start growing and making a lot more money or becoming a lot more successful, and then the other person stays stagnant, that one person that stays stagnant very easily becomes a dead weight and dragging the other person down. And that causes a lot of stuff. So, I mean, like, you know, that would be the biggest thing as far as a relationship. Make sure you have agreements. Make sure you guys are on a common mission and wake up every day and make sure that whatever you're doing for that day is, you know, in your common mission. I don't mean to sound military. Mission being the best mother and father to your family, taking care of your kids, or, you know, going out and giving the best day that you can to be the best father that you can. Your common mission to make sure that you never miss a baseball game or a t-ball game or whatever. That was something I can honestly say. My parents worked a lot and never missed a game.
That was episode 4. We should be back around October 10th or so with an enthusiasm engineer talking about how to deal with adverse situations in your life. Hope to have you back.